Hello and welcome back to Pod on the Tyne. My name's Taylor Payne and there's a slight change of plan for us this week. Sorry if you've been hanging on the phone for us. We are publishing the show slightly later in the week than usual. We had planned to do a season review, but events, dear boy, events. I've got two lovely chaps with me this morning. George Corkin's here. How are you, George?
I'm smirking slightly because listening to you say publishing the show slightly later in the week because why haven't exactly? Thank you.
We haven't seen Sean for a while.
We are publishing the show slightly later in the week, gentlemen.
I'm losing my church appeal.
The Rock.
How are you, George? Apart from
I'm okay, thank you. I'm no longer watching Newcastle United lose football matches, so I'm absolutely over the moon with joy.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Doesn't get much better than that, does it?
Doesn't get any better than that.
How are you, Chris Woff? You all right?
I'm good, thank you. Yes, just back from Crete, where my lovely sister and now brother-in-law got married, which was wonderful. So congratulations to Vic and Louis. So back here, yes, I missed the Fulham game, didn't watch it. I was going to say the highlights, but the lower lights.
Yeah, you lucky bastard.
Yeah, I did. I'm glad to see that George is sat back in his home office rather than in the Thames, as he threatened to put himself in at one stage. But yeah, it was. Have you cooled down yet, George? You sounded.
Oh, it was so hot as well. It was unbelievable in London.
It was both hot and bothered, weren't you?
Oh, I certainly was. Was it hotter than Crete? That's what I wanted.
It was actually hotter than Crete. Yeah,
it was unbelievable. Yeah, it was. It was sort of astonishing. One of the worst things about Fulham, I mean, apart from absolutely everything else, was sort of seeing the sun gradually come towards the Johnny Haynes stand, and it's like knowing that, like, at some point, probably, you know, Newcastle are losing, it's going to be the 85th minute, and then suddenly I'm going to be in the full glare of the sun. You're watching it make this slow progress across the field. Yeah, it was, and then came home to blissful Newcastle to find it 10 degrees less. So it was nice.
Lovely stuff. Right then, so the season...
That was George with the weather, and now it's back to Taylor for the sport.
Thanks very much, George. So the review of the season will come next week. More on that a bit later, but there have been some significant developments in Newcastle's summer transfer dealings. Let's sum them up with some headlines in 30 seconds or less before discussing in more detail later on. So, Gordon's away. Barcelona swoop, George.
Yeah, there had been a feeling that that Anthony Gordon would be moving to Bayern Munich, but no, they have not stumped up the cash. Barcelona have. It's around 70 million quid. He is gone. And Newcastle United have been absolutely determined to get on with their business early, and this is very much part of that.
Miley for Miles, an extended contract for Lewis M, Chris.
Yes, Louis Miley has signed a contract, 6 years, we believe it is, to remain at St James's Park. Huge for the club, huge boost for everyone, particularly after the injury he had at the end of last season. And he is now 20 years of age as well, so we have to stop referring to him as a teenager. He is no longer a teenage prodigy, he is just a prodigy now.
Yes, indeed. Maguire sick, Burn named in England squad.
Yeah, that was all a bit curious, wasn't it? Harry Maguire, followed by absolutely anybody who's ever met Harry Maguire, complaining about his omission from the England squad. But Dan Burn is in, hooray. Tino Livramento is in, hooray. Anthony Gordon is in, who cares? Lewis Hall isn't in. That's a bit sad.
Does it count as Newcastle having three England players then, if technically by the time the World Cup starts, well, he isn't a Newcastle player anymore, Anthony Gordon, so does that mean... Because when he was called up...
Do you want to think about...
But when he was called up, he was a Newcastle player, but then he's no longer a Newcastle player. So how does that work as a... Officially?
Well, he's no longer a Newcastle... I can almost hear your brain thinking.
It's just...
I mean...
Yeah, because it's like three Newcastle players were called up, but only two of them are at the World Cup. It's weird, isn't it?
Oh,
you're
so
weird. You are weird.
The disappearing England player. The disappearing Newcastle United England player. What does it mean? Where's he gone? Mm. Was it Colonel Mustard with a lead pipe in the kitchen?
Right then, let's move on swiftly.
One of us clearly has holiday brain here. It's usually me.
Right, obviously Anthony Gordon is the biggest story of the week, but let's start with the joyous news that the Barcelona-bound winger will be joined in the England squad. Or will he? I don't know. Are we saying that? I don't know. For the 2026 World Cup by his former teammates, Tino Livramento and Dan Burn. George, Dan Burn, great news to see him on the plane.
Yeah, just a great story, isn't it? Yeah, we heard from Dan, or our Extra Time subscribers did, in an extended interview that I did with him not too long ago. And he was saying then, whatever happened, he would feel like he'd done absolutely everything he could to get in it, and he was kind of at peace with that. But, you know, having been involved in sort of all the squads for a year and the get-togethers and so on, he felt he deserved to be on the plane, and he's there. It's just a kind of great story. His career has been one big, long, slow burn, but, you know, just taking a step back, looking at what he's achieved over the past 18 months or so is, yeah, incredible.
Was that a deliberate turn of phrase?
What did I say?
Slow burn.
A slow burn. Well, I mean, we did sick burn in the headlines, which I didn't really understand. And then a slow burn. Yeah, yeah. So it's great. And it's great for his family. He'll go out there and watch their lad. I don't know about you two. I know about Chris's sort of views about international football, but it's when there's been a connection,
yeah,
that I can feel to the team that I've supported them most. So obviously massive for me, 86 and 90 in particular, when you've got Bobby as manager and you've got Gazza playing and Beardsley and Waddle in the squad. I've never felt more English than I did in 1990. It's a kind of weird way of putting it, but it's true. And, you know, obviously hope Dan and Tino get their opportunities to play.
Yes, Dan's inclusion became the big headline, didn't it, when Harry Maguire posted a statement online before the squad had been announced. He said, "I was confident I could have played a major part this summer for my country after the season I've had. I've been left shocked and gutted by the decision. I've loved nothing more than pulling on that shirt and representing my country over the years. I wish the players all the best this summer." Chris, Maguire's slightly sour reaction, maybe some indication as to why Thomas Tuchel left him out in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, and seemingly the reporting of it suggests that he was quite sour. I never want to read too much into just one sort of statement that a player puts out. They were clearly emotional. If he thought he was going to the World Cup, I can sort of understand his reaction to a certain degree. But yeah, I get. And that's the thing about Burn, is that when people may look at it and question form or quality, should he be going to the World Cup? When you have a squad of that size, there are going to be players who basically either aren't going to play or are going to play very little, but need to constantly drive standards, need to be able to get up every morning and be in the camp and not sort of change the mood, not pull everyone down, like Connor Cody did for a while and was given that sort of recognition previously under Gareth Southgate. Clearly, Burn is not a favourite to start matches. I'm not writing him off at all. Maybe he will force his way in the team, but the expectation is he probably wouldn't be in the starting lineup, but he will put everything into that, and he will make sure that everyone else is prepped. And that's the difficulty, I suppose, of composing a squad. When you speak to the managers and coaches when they're in this sort of situation, you need the right balance of personalities as well as the right balance of players. And Burn will be a credit to all of them, and will make sure that if England are to have a successful World Cup, even if Dan Burn barely features on the field, it won't be because he hasn't played a big part in that, because he will have done off it.
Chris makes a massively important point, and it's not just about the first 11, it's about the squad, it's about the composition of the squad. And when you look at Newcastle's own story over the past 3-4 years, and you look at some of the people who remained involved, weren't necessarily playing, or even now aren't playing every week, it's such a vital thing. Yes, you need quality, yes, you need the right attitude, yes, you need athleticism, all of those things, but you need people who set the tone, who drive standards. Someone like Matt Ritchie remained involved at the club beyond his point where he was able to do it on a regular basis, yeah, in the Premier League, precisely because he was so valuable off the pitch. People, you know, people scoff at that. They say, why is he still there? You know, like, why do people keep him around? People talk about Mark Gillespie. It's very interesting. England are taking a training goalkeeper with them to America, yeah, as well, by the way. This is a role that is becoming increasingly prominent. Mark Gillespie knows he's never going to play for Newcastle at this point. He is valuable because he comes into training every single day knowing that he has to smile, he has to set a tone, he has to be available for, you know, not just for training sessions, but for added bits of training, keeps everybody alert. The day that he walks into training being aggrieved that he's not playing is the day that the whole system falls apart. So I do think that the reaction from Harry Maguire is interesting. You can read, as Chris says, you can read too much into these things, but Tuchel had already said that Maguire was effectively fourth choice centre-half. Now, if you're going to be fourth choice centre-half, the chances of you playing are not great. So what do you do in the meantime? Again, as Chris says, you come into training every day, you're good, you're up for it, you're smiling, you're happy, you're aggressive, you're making it look like you're going to play, even if chances are you're not. Now, if that's any insight at all into Harry Maguire, okay, I'm not playing in England's first match and I'm just going to sit around and sulk, that's no good. And they won't have that with Dan.
This is it.
He will feel to himself that he should be playing, but if he's not, he will do absolutely everything to support the rest of the players around them. We don't understand this enough in football. It is of huge, huge importance.
Well, it's about that inter-squad harmony, isn't it? And building and harbouring that feeling. And it's a group that needs to work as a group. You can't have anybody sitting in the corner sulking with their head down. Everyone's got to be on it and everyone's got to be focused on the same goal.
Well, I was going to say, again, we've mentioned this before, but this has been one of the thoughts around Fabian Schär and whether he stays around at the club. Now, at his best, and he's been an incredible servant to Newcastle. He's been brilliant. He still has qualities that no other defender has at the club. One of the concerns they've had about him staying in an era where Malik Chow has come into the team and is a lot younger and has been very good, and there's Botman, blah, blah, blah. How would Schär feel about not starting every week? And there have been concerns. It's just his personality type that when he's not played in the past, he's been a bit sulky and he's wanted to play and he's not been happy about leave. Now, there has then also been this mood that more recently he's come to understand that at his age, he can't expect to play every week and he's happy to take on a less active role, if that's the right thing. Now, if he is, then that is a great quality for Newcastle to have. He is still a performer who could hang around. But it's about that acceptance of his role in things. I just think I do think it's fascinating, though, all of that.
For me, as far as Dan's concerned, I feel just really bloody proud of him.
Yeah,
I'm just
totally.
So happy that he's there. I think it's such a massive achievement. I don't think it can be underplayed. I know he's been in the England squad since the week after the cup final last year, and he's acquitted himself really well. But when we go back to when he first became a Newcastle player, if anybody had said to you, Dan Byrne will be playing for England in the World Cup in 2026, I think you would have laughed at them, maybe. I think you would have thought, well, you're taking the piss, basically. But I'm so proud of what he's achieved, and it's testament to his determination, his sort of perseverance, the way he's gone about the game, the kind of pro he is, the sort of model professional that he is. He's really pushed himself, and to get into that squad, I don't think we can underplay how much of an achievement that is for Dan Byrne. I think it's absolutely incredible. I want to also say that Tino Livramento is a bit of an interesting choice, Chris, isn't he? Newcastle fans are primarily going to be concerned that he'll report back fully fit after the World Cup. He's not had the best season as far as injuries
go. Well, he's probably not reporting into the World Cup fully fit, never mind.
Very true.
I mean, he's obviously, they have done the medical checks and he'd have been passed to be all right. And Howe had suggested that if they'd really wanted to push Livramento, then maybe he could have been back for the Fulham game, but really it wasn't in any of their interests to have done that. Now, Livramento, he's had a lot of injury problems when he has played at right back, certainly in 2026. I think he's put in quite a few underwhelming, if not poor, performances.
Yeah,
I've said for a while, in some ways, I think his better performances over the last 18 months, 2 years, have been at left back. But that versatility is probably one of the reasons he's got in the squad. He's been around the England setup for quite a while. They like him, they rate him highly. Been a lot of talk about whether he may leave this summer. That seems to have receded in recent weeks, not completely, but given the injury issues, if he has a positive World Cup, then maybe some of the interest that some of those long-term interested parties come back and show him. But I hope he does get opportunities, and I hope he does stay fully fit, and then maybe that gives him confidence both in himself again, rediscover that form heading into pre-season and next season, and maybe he gets a bit more confidence in his body, because I am always a bit concerned when players get labelled as sort of injury prone, quote unquote, or crocs or the like, because Tino Livramento wants to play football. It's not his fault that his body, and it's not his fault that he keeps having these injuries. And Livramento, when he can play a full consistent season, as we've seen in previous years for Newcastle, is a very, very good fullback in a world where there aren't that many top level fullbacks, certainly who can play both sides. And what we want to see is Tino Livramento get back to his best. So if he does get opportunities across in North America, then I hope he takes them and then can take them next season with Newcastle.
Do you think that versatility and being able to play both sides is part of the reason why he's ended up going in the squad anyway?
It could well be, yeah. I mean, that was certainly how I was sort of trying to justify it in my own head, because obviously, you know, Lewis Hall doesn't make it. And I think if you're only thinking about it in Newcastle terms, that's quite unusual, because Lewis Hall, by and large, has had a very, very good season, and Tino Livramento has had a challenging season. I think that's fair to say. And you know, this isn't an original observation, and it's something that, you know, that Chris has said plenty of times, that Livramento has actually looked better as a left back filling in for Lewis Hall than he has at right back at times this season. So, but that, you know, that versatility, it's something that we saw from Kieran Trippier, of course, with England over the years, that, you know, a really good right back, but for a little while England had about 9 billion right backs, and so it would be Trippier playing at the left in tournaments sometimes, or certainly for some matches. And that, you know, that versatility is a great thing to have. We saw a little bit of an experiment with Lewis Hall at right back. I think that will be a good thing for him in the future, you know, having had experience of that. But it didn't look quite as natural a fit as it did the other way around with Livramento at left back. So, yeah, that versatility is definitely very useful. And as I say, hopefully he can use this tournament to get fully fit.
Yes, Lewis Hall missing out was a bit of a surprise to me, I have to be honest. Arguably Newcastle's player of the season, whose body language has shown signs of grumpiness during some of his better performances, Chris. But he is going to play plenty for England, isn't he? He will definitely get back in the England squad at some point.
You have to assume so. And yeah, it was a surprise, just because all of the narrative seemed to be for a long while that he was likely to go. I mean, I do sometimes think that, and I'm sure this is the case to all clubs, we get caught in a little bit of a bubble, maybe, of how good players are, or how good we are, I think they are relative to others. And with Lewis Hall, undoubtedly a very, very high ceiling that he has, and he was very much in the conversation for Newcastle player of the season at Plumford, Bruno Guimaraes and The Athletic, but Lewis Hall would have been comfortably second. Some of the performances he delivered, particularly against Barcelona, showed the standard and the levels that he can reach. But then you've got Nico O'Reilly,
of course,
at Manchester City. There are other players out there who have performed well, or perform in a certain way that maybe Thomas Tuchel wants. And perhaps injuries and him missing out on certain squads at key moments have counted against him as well. That probably hasn't benefited him, that he wasn't in a few of those squads because he was sidelined at certain points. The body language point, yeah, that there were a few signs of grumpiness and maybe frustration out in the field, but I don't think that affected his performances necessarily. Yeah, a couple of defensive issues towards the back end of the season, and he obviously got hooked against Bournemouth and then was left out of the side. But Hall, is the development he's had over the last 2 years has been huge, and there is still a lot more development to come, and if he can develop into the player that we all believe that he can be, then he will be very, very special moving forward, and he will be in a lot of England squads, as you say.
Few whispers of Man United sniffing around as well, Chris. What do we know about that?
I haven't heard of any concrete interest in them as of yet. I think the Bayern Munich have been linked as well. Newcastle, I think, are hopeful and confident that he will stay. That they're certainly not somebody they have been actively looking to sell, in the same way that maybe Anthony Gordon has an acceptance. Well, he is gone. That Sandro Tonali, there is a chance he goes.
Is he though? Is he still in? I mean, he's been named in the England squad as a Newcastle player though, Chris. So has he gone,
or
is he just?
Do you have to apply to FIFA for a transfer of you?
Yeah, we'll have to find out.
Do you know what I'm worried about? Is Panini stickers going to say Newcastle United on it?
Well,
isn't
it will. So there you go.
It will. Yeah.
So Chris is right.
So Anthony Gordon is off to Barcelona. This story was confirmed by David Ornstein this week, and this one came out of the claret and blue, George.
Well, it did.
You see what I did there?
It did. Very clever. Yeah, it did. I mean, not in the sense of Gordon leaving, because that was something that we fully expected, and certainly, you know, over the weeks with him being left out of the team, but on the bench in this strange sort of limbo that he's been in, and with Eddie Howe saying that this was with one eye on the future. But yeah, there have been a lot of noises about Bayern Munich. They've been talking to Newcastle behind the scenes, but there's been very little movement in terms of their budget in terms of what they were prepared to pay, and then along come Barcelona. And it did, on the day itself, it developed very, very quickly. It felt like a bit of a surprise that they have the funds in place to do it, but they have. The swiftness itself, the speed of the deal, I think we have to talk about that from a Newcastle point of view as well. Similar a bit to Lewis Miley, and who we'll come on to talk about. And of course, you have to also take a step back and say that, you know, there needs to be a willing club, you know, who are willing to have these conversations. There need to be willing participants in this deal. But Newcastle have been determined to get things moving quickly this summer. There is an absolute determination that there is no repeat of Alexander Isak and what happened there that destabilised the club, destabilised the team. They knew that there would be outgoings this summer. They've wanted to control it as best they can. Obviously, they want a good price for players, but not at the expense of stability, not at the expense of doing their own business. And so it did come out of the blue, and it's been handled very, very quickly. But that is with the intent of it being on Newcastle's terms as well as on Barcelona's terms. That is just really important.
Yes, a swift negotiation, as George says, but looks like a good one. £70 million, the price quoted, Chris, plus add-ons. It's a decent chunk of change, isn't it, for Anthony Gordon?
It is. I mean, we could debate whether I've seen some of the discourse from Newcastle fans being he's worth more than that. He can play across the front three. He's scored 10 Champions League goals. He's 25. He's an England national, going to the World Cup. I get that element of things, but I also get the other side of it is that Newcastle have managed to get a fee quite early on. I mean, the fact that Barcelona have been willing to go to that price quite early, as quickly as they have done, when Bayern were very dogged in their determination not to. They had a set price that they were willing to pay for Gordon, and Newcastle sort of begrudgingly respect that. As in, like, that's really how a club should operate. Is you should have a price that you're willing to go up to for a player. Newcastle didn't do that last summer. They ended up overpaying for players because of the desperation. Buying was, this is how much we value Anthony Gordon. We're not going to pay any more. Newcastle wanted more, and Barcelona came and got them in, because maybe if this had dragged on through the rest of the summer, maybe they could have got another 5, 10, even 15 million. But is it worth that for the effect it now has on the window? Gordon is sorted. He's gone. Newcastle know that they have that money now already, minus the 15% of profit sell-on fee that Everton were due. But they still should give them, don't want to get too technical, but where it is in terms of the amortization of his deal. He was signed for 40 million. It's risen to probably about 44 with the add-ons initially. He signed a contract extension. It was extended over. I think he's about 25, 28 million on the books now for Newcastle. So they're still going to make a significant profit regardless of how much they have to give to Everton from that. And to have a sell-on fee as well, if Gordon does end up leaving Barcelona. Barcelona are a club who trades inwards and outwards a lot. They may well end up selling him. So for Newcastle to have a sell-on fee of profit again, that's important. And I do feel that this does represent a change in how Newcastle are trying to do their business. Whether they can replicate this moving forward is another matter. This is just one example of it. But it does feel like a sea change, certainly from last summer in the Isak situation.
Just to reiterate that point, Newcastle ended up getting more money out of Liverpool than in their initial negotiations when they insisted that he wasn't for sale, but at what cost, you know? And so getting that extra, whatever it was last summer, £10 million, £15 million, did not do them any good. I mean, they ended up wildly overspending, as Chris said, when they came to doing their own business, but it disrupted anything. So there is this feeling of, let's get the deal done, let's get on with our business and take it from there. You know, Newcastle have done this in the past when they come to, you know, buying players, hoping to strike a bargain, hoping to strike a deal. Oh yeah, we've saved £5 million here, we've saved £10 million there, and it hasn't worked out. They've, in footballing terms, they've lost out. And so this is a footballing decision. It suits them. I think there are other things to look at potentially down the line. There may be friendlies with Barcelona down the line, you know, that would bring in more funds. And this is just a deal. It feels to me that suits all parties, suits Barcelona, suits Anthony Gordon. He wants to play in the Champions League, and it suits Newcastle.
I'll be honest, I've played at Barcelona enough this season. I don't want to be playing friendlies against them anytime soon. I've seen more than enough.
But just on that, though, and this is slightly supposition, but speaking to people in and around sort of Barcelona, around those matches, I think that those three games have played a key role in them being interested in Gordon. Beyond what they saw from him in the Champions League, scoring 10 goals in that competition, the effect that he had against the way Barcelona play, particularly against that high line, pressing from the front, scoring at St. James's in the first game, the effect that he generally had. And I know he wasn't available for one of them due to suspension, but generally the effect that he has had, I think, has potentially led to this deal as well. So Newcastle may have not been in the Champions League next season, but their participation this year, beyond the financial rewards that they get in prize money, they may well have actually got the deal for Gordon over the line because of that as well.
Potential ramifications, Chris, for Marcus Rashford as well, who's obviously been there on loan this season.
Yeah, he's been on loan at Barcelona, and they have an option to be able to sign him, I believe, which is till the middle of June. And it's not definitely, though, this is the information for our colleagues at the Athletic who cover Barcelona. It's not definitely that Barcelona will not sign him now, but it makes it more unlikely. And that even though the outlay on Gordon transfer fee wise is more than it would have been for them to meet the clause for Rashford, given A, Gordon's age, but B, also the length of contract they're giving Gordon, which is going to be through till 2031, so a 5-year deal. They wouldn't want to give as long a deal to Rashford. When we talk about amortization and being able to spread the cost over a longer period of time, it actually makes it, in their view, more financial sense to spend more in terms of a transfer fee on Gordon, but be able to spread the cost there. And also his wages, although he's getting significantly more there than he is on Newcastle, where he is one of the higher earners, Marcus Rashford was on a lot of money, and I think that they will still save to a certain degree there. So yeah, whether Rashford, who doesn't seem to have a future at Manchester United, will follow Gordon to Barcelona is interesting to see. And it's also interesting because they're obviously in the England camp together. And is there going to be any ill feeling from Rashford towards Gordon that maybe Gordon's nicked his place at Barcelona? Who knows?
And what about Newcastle fans as well? Fair to say, we never quite completely fell in love with Anthony Gordon, did we? We had this on Blue Sky from Ronan D. Donnellan. It says, I feel bad for saying this as I bear zero ill will to Anthony Gordon, but the last time I was this happy about a player being sold, Billy Whitehurst had just been peddled to Oxford.
that timestamps, Ronan. Yeah, I'm not sure if I can say that I feel happy about it.
It doesn't hurt this one, George, does it?
No.
Way that the Alexander Isak deal hurt.
No, I think the premise of the question is a kind of fair one. When Gordon arrived, it was seen as an attempt to get them across the line in terms of qualifying for the Champions League. Didn't work out for Gordon in those first few months, and there was his very grumpy reaction to being substituted at Brentford, which he subsequently apologised for. So was that. He then goes away in the summer, excels for England under 21s, and comes back and looks a completely different player. But he wasn't in the team that won the League Cup. He was suspended for that match, and you sort of remember that feeling of, oh no, like, we've done it again, we've imploded again. And so that incredible, I mean, of course he was part of the squad and a very, very important part of the team and squad, but he didn't play that day. Personally, the way I feel about it is that he isn't quite amongst that sort of group of legends. I think there is that sort of feeling of, on his day, exceptional, but on his day didn't perhaps come quite often enough. And I think there has been almost that sense of reserve from him, that his body language hasn't always been good. Yeah, perhaps we've not fell head over and heels in love with him as we have with other players. I think there is a bit of that. And then this season, I thought he started the season very well in that one game against Aston Villa, leading the press in Isak's absence. He then gets sent off against Liverpool. And I think at that point, there was very much a feeling around the club that he'd lost his confidence, that he wasn't able to play on the edge so much because he was worried about getting sent off. And, I think that remained the case throughout the Premier League season. His raw numbers were very, very good, but it didn't feel to me that the evidence of the eyes quite backed that up. So, yeah, I don't think we're reinventing or rewriting history to say he was never quite super legend that we fell in love with.
The reality with Gordon is that I don't think he ever really envisaged himself being at Newcastle long term. He's said all the right things publicly, and there's been quite a few times where he's almost pushed back on sort of the idea that he was close to leaving in the summer of 2024. He then retracted that at a later date. But the reality was, even at the point that if you just go back to when he left Everton, I mean, the summer before, Spurs and Chelsea had been there and pushed for him. The deal didn't happen. His form dropped in a very poor Everton side, but then Newcastle were the only side who were really there and willing to commit the money at the time. And if you look at what Newcastle have managed to achieve there, they've nearly doubled their money in the time that he's been at the club. So the deal financially has worked out for them. On the field, maybe he hasn't reached exactly the height he would have wanted consistently, but he certainly has improved under Howe. He certainly has been more than worthwhile for the money they brought in. But then 2023-24, when he was so single-minded that he was focused on giving everything to Newcastle, he was exceptional that season. He was Newcastle's player of the season. He was in the conversation to be in the Premier League's player of the season. He was so effective. But then the PSR situation happens. He almost goes to Liverpool, his boyhood club. And from that point on, it's felt like this has been inevitable. And you speak to people, and I remember speaking to people in Newcastle over the past few months, and there's almost been, the message back has almost been, it's basically in all of our interests that he goes this summer. It's reached the natural conclusion that to get him focused. And I think part of the reason beyond tactically why it worked to have Anthony Gordon through the middle at certain points this season was also just to try and stimulate him, to try and extract more. It felt like when he was playing on the left, certainly in the Premier League, that he was almost going through the motions or wasn't quite reaching the height. He didn't want to play on the right, as Howe even came out and said at one point. And then obviously he's not even in the team come the end of the season. So yes, I think that this is not one of those players who you look at and maybe like Bruno Guimaraes, who at certain points maybe thought about leaving elsewhere but flipped it round and turned himself into a Newcastle legend, turned himself into Mr. Newcastle. With Gordon, mindset-wise, it's never been quite able to get that sort of single-minded focus. His focus drifted and it was brought back to a certain degree, but I think the reality was from that Liverpool discussion, those Liverpool discussions in 2024, it was a case of when, not if he left.
Yeah, it's a great point. The first half of 24-25 was such a struggle. It was such a struggle for Howe to bring his big players back round because there'd been such an unsettled feeling around the squad. Constant resets. Gordon, I think, was the biggest example of this. And as Chris says, there was very much a mindset of nobody wanting to go through that again. And so that's why this feels like the right time. I'm interested to know your feelings, Taylor, on Gordon, the player, the man, the legend, the myth.
For me, some incredible moments, some brilliant memories. You know, he's been involved in some of the best moments of my Newcastle supporting career, and I've loved watching him at times. At times he's frustrated, at times he's cut a kind of slightly, a slightly frustrated figure. I wish I'd seen more of him at his absolute best. I think, but to be honest, George, the deal comes at the best time for all parties, and I think it's one of those where it's correct what it says in the running order. He's not a player I've fallen in love with over the years. I've loved watching him, and there's been times when I've thought, oh my God, I can't believe this guy plays for us. You know, and when you see him just absolutely rinsing fullbacks and taking them on and whipping crosses in the box and scoring goals and stuff like that, I love seeing players like that for Newcastle. But as far as this is concerned now, it's the right time. It's the right time for him. It's the right time for Newcastle, and it's the right time for the fans as well. I think it's the best deal for everybody at the right time.
What I would say about him as well is that I don't think there's any player who more typifies Howe Ball, and it's very better than Gordon when he's at his ability to press in the front, the athleticism, energy, direct nature that he can bring.
But he's a nightmare.
I think when he is at his very best, yeah, and I think that at his very best, he was absolutely typified that how Ball at its very best.
Yes, absolutely. Some great memories, some great goals, and we send Anthony Gordon on his way with nothing but good wishes.
Well, I'll tell you what, we send him on his way with wishes.
Just send him on his way, yeah.
I think he will do very well at Barcelona. I think he will.
Yeah, I think he will. Yeah.
A Before the Gordon transfer news broke, we'd already had a little early summer boost as well with news that Lewis Miley had signed renewed terms, and it's a lengthy commitment, a six-year deal. He is the future of the Newcastle United first team, George, isn't he?
The future, yes, 6 years. But I think the point is that they do see him now as the present for Newcastle's first team. And I think if he hadn't have had all these fitness issues, he would have been playing at the end of the season. He would have been playing at right back, if nowhere else. And I think there is just that feeling that, yeah, we can't talk about him, as Chris said at the top of the show, as a teenager anymore, because he isn't. But like, we can't talk about him as being a player of potential. He's a player who's ready, and there's a feeling that he is ready. We've had that sort of bittersweet feelings about Elliot Anderson. He's obviously in the England squad too, almost certainly going to get a big move to another club this summer from Nottingham Forest. Just that feeling, Newcastle can't let that happen again. Cannot be put in that position again when they're selling off their top talent. You know, Miley has got absolutely everything. He is a great athlete. He's a great physical specimen. He's got quality on the ball. He's got a footballing brain. So it is the complete package you would want. You know, the way that he slotted in at right back this season in huge fixtures and just did it as if he'd played there, you know, for his entire life. Just incredible to have that level of maturity and ability. And yeah, there is just that sense that now is the time for him to really be a figurehead for this team. They do see him as a future leader of the team as well. Might be a different kind of leadership to what we've seen in the past, but he's just got everything. And that was a great boost. That was a nice little boost at the start of the week after Fulham. And again, you know, this is part of a deliberate strategy on Newcastle's behalf. They're showing that they mean business. They're showing that they want to get things done. It's really good news.
We heard from Lewis as well earlier in the week when that announcement was made. He said, "It's been an amazing journey so far and I'm excited for what's ahead. I'm now working hard every day to get back on the pitch even stronger next season and start to repay the faith that has been shown in me." As George said, Chris, we've had a little boost as fans. This is a little boost for the academy as well, isn't it?
It's a big boost for the academy. You need that. You can talk about theoretical pathways all you want, but you have to be able to have that affirmation, that ability, someone to aspire to be. And the fact that there's been Elliot Anderson and Lewis Miley, now part of the reason why is also because they are supreme talents and they've worked at it, but so you have to have that natural talent to a certain degree to be able to make it in the Premier League. But then if you go a bit further back and look at someone like Paul Dummett, who would say, "I was not the most talented player in my age group, but he found a way to keep progressing and became a pathway at that stage," which then sort of dried up a little bit. If you combine the two, that's what Newcastle want to have. They want to have more players of a greater talent within their academy, and they've been signing players to do that, signing youngsters, recruiting more locally, nationally and internationally. They're going to continue to do that. They're improving their scouting network under Ross Wilson. They're massively increasing the scope of that. There'd be changes on the loan side. But then to have it's all well and good just having this as an idea. When you actually have players who you can show they have done that, then other people, particularly who've played with Lewis Miley in age groups, or seen him in the year above, can think, I can do that. I can actually do that. And it's also Eddie Howe needs to be able to show that he can bring that he is the coach who can do that. If that's part of your model, you need a head coach who is going to give those young players opportunities. He did it to a degree with Elliot Anderson. He's done even more with Lewis Miley, and moving forward, there needs to be even more of that. And it's hugely significant. There is the Lewis Miley room, as we've said, at the academy, which is the one which will be renamed the next time an academy youngster start a Premier League match for Newcastle, which didn't happen this season. As we've said previously, Alex Murphy did start in the Champions League, but didn't quite count for that. But that's what you want, that aspiration element, and to have someone like Miley to look to build towards, and just have that connection as well. It does feel like, I think, and this is not to just draw too many dispersions with Chelsea, but beyond Levi Colwill, you look at the Chelsea squad and it feels like there's a disconnect with supporters there, because it doesn't, it just feels like they're just, they've got this, beyond Newcastle's trading model, which we say needs to improve at Chelsea, it just feels like they do just trade players in and out, and you can't have that connection, the longevity with fans, the building there. But if you've got someone like Lewis Miley, who you're going to build your team around going forward, who you know is Newcastle through and through, that is huge, both what it says to the academy, but also what it says for the foundation, really, of you as a club and its ethos.
George, they'll be desperate to have him fit for the start of the season, won't they? They'll need him coming back to pre-season and firing on all cylinders.
Yes, and that is the suggestion, that he should be fit for around the start of pre-season, which is really important, because that gives you the foundation stone for the season ahead. It's just been so frustrating, 2026 for him so far. He suffered that kind of weird dead leg injury which didn't heal, and he missed 2 months, 13 games because of that.
Yeah.
And then this broken fibula happens, so he missed the last 3 games of the season. Again, Newcastle had an issue at fullback during that period with I'm just getting emotional whenever every time I think about broken fibulas, I just get emotional. Trippier played some of that, but of course we knew that he was leaving too, and so Newcastle were left with a big hole in the team and the squad at that point. And Miley certainly would have played. So yeah, they need him back. He will be pushing for a starting place in Newcastle's team somewhere or other come August. It is his time to shine.
Chris, does he need to nail down a position, or are we fairly relaxed on that? Obviously, he's played right back this season in centre midfield as well.
Whether he needs to nail down a position specifically yet, I'm not entirely sure he does. I think he largely should be in the side most weeks if he is performing as he has done throughout this season. But whether it's in those different roles, I think it may depend on the opposition, the game, what he can bring to that. I've said before that if Tonali was to leave this summer, then Miley is almost a natural successor potentially as that number six position, but he also can play the number eight role. He's shown he can play it right back. It partly depends on the business Newcastle do this summer as well. And I don't think it'll have done him any harm being in those positions at that age. And throughout the academy, that's what Newcastle try to do as well with their youngsters, is to make sure they understand different roles. And I think we will see the benefit for him in 2-3 years' time. Yes, I think you'd like to see him regularly playing in one position. But for now, I don't see it as being he's a quote-unquote versatile player who you basically don't know. He doesn't really have a best position, so you just play him in certain roles. He can play well in each of those positions. It's not that he's in the team because there's nobody else to play in those roles. It's because he's in the team and can offer something in each of them.
Just going back very briefly to Elliot Anderson, one of the sort of notable things about him moving, and plenty of people have spoken about this before, including Alan Shearer, you know, when he was at Southampton and then moved to Blackburn, it was that move that made them sort of think about themselves differently. Like, I'm now a first team player, I'm not an academy player. We've seen just how good Elliot Anderson is at Nottingham Forest when he's been bought for a decent, nowhere near enough, oh my God, you know, transfer fee. And he then goes into the first team and plays as a first team player. Whereas at Newcastle, obviously at the time he had that midfield of Tonali, Jolinton and Bruno sort of ahead of him. And when he was coming to the team, it wasn't for an extended spell. He sometimes played in a more elevated position on the left, on the wing. And it's like, okay, yeah, I can see he's got this absolute enormous talent, but is he good enough? And where does he play? And it's not until playing him and playing him regularly that you actually get to see what a fine, fine footballer he is. And so, of course, it's, you know, huge sadness that it took him to move to do that. Newcastle, I think, have to be brave enough to sort of say, we've got an outstanding midfield player here, and play him, and, you know, see where that takes him. And I think that's the stage that he's at now as a player. You've got to play him. I'm not saying any player should be starting absolutely every week, but you've got to play him, and you've got to throw him into it, give him some time, and trust his talent to do the rest.
Right then, chaps, a couple of tickety tidbits before we finish off. The August friendly announced against Everton at Edinburgh's Murrayfield Stadium. There's been a few raised eyebrows at the prices for this one, Chris.
Yeah, so Newcastle are going to play Everton at Murrayfield in Edinburgh on Wednesday, the 12th of August.
Smack in the middle of the festival. That's
smack in the middle of the festival, yeah. So not easy for if people are going to stay over, which you may have to. The kickoff's at at 5:15, so theoretically he can get the train then back from Newcastle, but coming across from Merseyside, not easy to get back at that sort of time. And yeah, some of the prices, there were some sort of cheaper tickets, I think around the £25 to £35 mark, but there are also options up to sort of £85, which don't seem very reasonable price-wise. And also, will people take that up? Because really what you want is, if you've got a 67,000 seater stadium, then you want to sell it out, really. I've been, when I was at university in Edinburgh, I would sometimes go along and see Edinburgh rugby play there, and you'd be in a stadium which has got a capacity of nearly 70,000, and there'd be crowds of 1,500, 2,000 people, and it just feels empty. You can hear it echoing around. You'd rather that was played in a smaller stadium for that. And so hopefully that doesn't affect it too much. Maybe prices will come down. It's been dealt with by Ticketmaster, I think it is, rather than Newcastle United themselves. But yeah, I think that not ideal in that regard, even if this is sort of an interesting move to play a game up Murray Field in an iconic stadium like that. It will be an iconic rugby stadium rather than football one.
Yes, we've heard that the Level 7 area at St James's Park will be safe standing as well in the corner, George.
Yes, so that there has been, you know, long-running consultation between fans and club about improving matchday atmosphere, that sort of thing. It's not the first time that there's been a singing section in that part of the stadium, because there was one there previously under Mike Ashley's ownership. Didn't last a huge amount of time, mainly because they sang nasty songs about Mike Ashley's ownership. That might be a slight exaggeration, but yeah, I mean, it's good that the club are doing that, and that there's a will, and you know, ongoing conversations about how to improve the atmosphere at St James's.
Right then, chaps, that's just about it. I'll give you some information about what's coming up in the next few days as well. Extra Tyne subscribers, we're hoping to have a lovely interview for you with a member of the NUFC women's team. Just dotting some I's and crossing some T's on that. This week's Extra Tyne will be highlights of our recent live show collaboration with True Faith. Podinthetyne.supportandcast.fm if you want to hear that and everything else on our feed. Next week will now be our season review as well, and we want to hear from you, the dear listener. Player of the season, goal of the season, moment of the season, signing of the season, podcast highlight of the season, anything of the season, George's voice break whilst trying to say Newcastle of the season. Send us your nominations, and most importantly, tell us why you're putting them forward for consideration. An email to podinthetyne@gmail.com is the best way to send those in, but subscribers can use our Discord server as well, and we are active on Blue Sky at podinthetyne.bsky.com. Social. Give us a follow on Twitter X as well, at Pod on the Tyne. And that's just about it, chaps. Thank you very much for your time. Christopher Woff?
You're very welcome. Big deals tend to happen whenever I'm away on holiday, so I'm not away for the next few... I don't think I'll wait till the end of July, so that may mean Newcastle do absolutely no business whatsoever until then, so apologies in advance to everyone for that.
Fair play. Chris, two holidays, Woff. Eh? Nice. Hey, things are going well. George Corgan, thank you very much for your time.
You're very welcome. There's no Newcastle United to ruin my weekends now. So just to let you know, I'm going to stand in my back garden tomorrow and hit myself repeatedly in the face with a spade. Just to fill the gap is what I mean.
Wonderful. Wonderful stuff. All right. Thank you so much. Thanks to all of you for listening, and thanks to all of you subscribing as well on the Extra Tyne feed. From everybody at Pod on the Tyne, have a lovely week. We'll speak to you very soon. Take care. Goodbye. Potential ramifications, Chris, as well, for Marcus Rashford. Potential ramifications, Chris, for Marcus Rashford as well, who's obviously been...